10. Tesham Saratam Yoktanam Pajantam Priti Purvatam Tadami Buddhi Omantam Yenamamu Priyantite. To those who are constantly devoted to worshiping me with love, here it says, to those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. We have a translator now?
Yes, but simultaneously, if you do this hearing.
Okay. Purport. Oh, let's repeat that. To those. Yes, so much in that. This high level management here. Call for a committee meeting. Team is ready. Team set. To those who are constantly devoted, please repeat. To those who are constantly devoted.
To those who are constantly devoted.
To serving me with love.
To serving me with love.
I give the understanding.
I give the understanding.
By which they can come to me.
By which they can come to me.
Purport, in this verse, the word Buddhi Yogam is very significant. We may remember that in the second chapter, the Lord, instructing Arjuna, said that he had spoken to him of many things, and that he would instruct him in the way of Buddhi Yoga. Now, Buddhi Yoga is explained. Buddhi Yoga itself is action in Krishna consciousness. That is the highest intelligence. Buddhi means intelligence, and yoga means mystic activities or mystic elevation. When one tries to go back home, back to Godhead, takes fully to Krishna consciousness into devotional service, his action is called Buddhi Yoga. In other words, Buddhi Yoga is a process by which one gets out of the entanglement of this material world. The ultimate goal of progress is Krishna. People do not know this. Therefore, the association of devotees and a bona fide spiritual master are important. One should know that the goal is Krishna, and when the goal is assigned, then the path is slowly but progressively traversed, and the ultimate goal is achieved. When a person knows the goal of life, but is addicted to the fruits of activities, he is acting in karma yoga. And he knows the goal is Krishna, but he takes pleasure in mental speculations to understand Krishna, he is acting in Jnana Yoga. And when he knows the goal and seeks Krishna completely in Krishna consciousness and devotional service, he is acting in Bhakti Yoga or Buddhi Yoga. That is the which is the complete yoga. This complete yoga is the highest perfectional stage of life. A person may have a bona fide spiritual master and may be attached to a spiritual organization. But if he is not intelligent enough to make progress, then Krishna from within gives him instructions so he may ultimately come to him without difficulty. The qualification is that a person always engage himself in Krishna consciousness and with love and devotion render all kinds of services. He should perform some sort of work for Krishna, and that work should be with love. If a devotee is not intelligent enough to make progress on the path of self-realization, but is sincere and devoted to the activities of devotional service, the Lord gives him a chance to make progress and ultimately to attain him. So the verse again. Tesham Saratam Yudanam Vajnatam Priti Purvakam Tidami Buddhi Yogam Tam Enamam Upiyanti Te. To those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. Namo Vishnu Vraya Krishna Prasad Bhagat Srimade Bhaktivedanta Swami Janamane Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Vrtarane Nirvishesha Shungari Paskasha Ganesha Sarana. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna declares that he is the Supreme. And to become supreme is not so, well, it's not an ordinary thing to be God. To be God, you have to know everything. That's not very easy. Especially since you have to know every living entity, both in the material and the spiritual universes, of which there is quite a few. And not only that, but Krishna knows all our past identities since time immemorial, since all the millions of births each living entity has taken. To remember everyone's name in this room would be quite an accomplishment. To remember everyone's name in Serbia would even be a greater accomplishment. And to remember everyone's name throughout the whole Earth planet would even be a bigger accomplishment. Probably. And what to speak of one little universe. So Krishna is not an ordinary person. Of course, he's so great that we just take him for granted. We just don't really think he's very important. He's just so big. One person said that God is so big, he's so that you can't get far enough back to see him. You have to go back and back and back. He's so big, you can't get far enough back to even see him. So that's not very interesting. But not only Krishna knows everything, but he's also the most beautiful. That would be very interesting to find someone who had unlimited beauty. He would not only be Mr. Universe, he'd be Mr. All the Universes. Spiritual and mundane. And at the same time, he has all wealth. He has all fame. He has all renunciation. He has all strength. And that's what Krishna declares in the Bhagavad Gita. Everyone's looking for something, or as it says, Prabhupada writes in the Krishna book, everyone is looking for someone to love, or something to love. That Krishna should be the object of love is the central point of Krishna consciousness. That the example Prabhupada writes, the example of the gopis is very instructive for those who are trying to become Krishna conscious. Well, those activities of Krishna remembered by the gopis during his absence from Vrindavan, they give us some idea how attractive Krishna is not only to living entities, but even to the inanimate objects. That in Vrindavan, everyone, everything is attracted to Krishna. That is the perfect description of Krishna's attractiveness. In Vrindavan, the trees, the plants, the deer, the cows, the lakes, everyone, everything is attracted to Krishna. The example of the gopis is very instructive for those who are trying to remain in Krishna consciousness. Everyone is trying to love someone, that Krishna should be the object of love is the central point of Krishna consciousness. By constantly chanting the holy names, the Hare Krishna mantra, and remembering Krishna's activities, everyone can be completely in full Krishna consciousness, thus make his life sublime and fruitful. So in the beginning, because we're not so much aware of Krishna, therefore, when we hear about how great Krishna is, we think that maybe Krishna can help me out of my distress, or he can pay some of my bills, or he can tell me how to organize my life better, or he can, take care of some of my enemies. People don't like me, they kind of, Krishna has them disappear. So we look at Krishna as something, as a big sugar daddy, and they say, oh. Therefore, Krishna says, where are you? He's saying here, that Matsjita Matskata Prana Bodhyantash Parashparam Katayantashramam Nityan Tu Shanti Charamanti Cha. Where the devotees, they talk about Krishna. We don't have to become great philosophers and figure out, you know, how this material world is working, be a great doctor so everyone who comes here, we take care of all their diseases and distresses. Tell people how to economically advance. And we can worship God and how He'll send everything. Or we're not trying to tell people how to get ahead and how to understand everything. Self-improvement, or improve your family or your society. No, the only thing we're actually doing is trying to explain that everyone, including each one of us, we have an eternal relation with Krishna. So that's what the devotees talk about. They're like scientists, Prabhupada says, who get together and they explain about their experiment, how I serve Krishna in this way, and therefore how Krishna reciprocated and revealed himself to me. That's why those who go out in book distribution, often they would have meetings and they just talk about their experiences. Of course, every moment in this world, it's not that Krishna only appears in book distribution, otherwise he doesn't come down to the material world. But it's an experience because one is actually going out and for Krishna's sake, one is trying to fulfill Krishna's mission. And therefore Krishna has a tendency to reveal himself and to show how this material world is related to him, how all living entities are related to him. And therefore the devotees like to talk about that because they get realizations. How they go out and some person, I remember one time I was in an airport. I was in an airport quite a lot, but and then one person ran by, this is in Memphis, Tennessee, and he started to say, scream out all these obscenities and run by, and he was shouting at the top of his lungs and cursing us. And then around half an hour later, he walked back and bought a book from us. So people like that. You have all kinds of experiences. Different people. Because I also had the experience when I was doing the airport in Milwaukee, and it was so cold, it was 30 below zero outside, and inside the airport it was 10 below zero because they didn't have enough heat to heat up the airport. And everyone who came through the Milwaukee airport, they had already passed through Chicago where all the devotees had approached them. So they're all businessmen, they're going to fry. So they were not very polite to the devotees in Milwaukee, seeing us again in there. Anyway, I won't even bother going. Any case, there's something to talk about because there's some experience in relation to Krishna. And therefore, the devotees talk about those things. How that they heard of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, and then they had some experience of Krishna by following the process. Either Tushanti or Ramanti. Tushanti means they actually become a little purified from the modes of ignorance and passion. We're all disturbed by our tendency to fall into the modes of ignorance and passion. We may, well, anyhow, that's the disturbance. We may claim that there's so many problems in this world and everyone else, usually we claim everyone else is the problem. This is a problem, that is a problem. But our real problem is that we have a tendency to fall into the modes of ignorance and passion. That's our problem. And when we solve that problem, then we won't see any other problem. Because that's everyone's problem in the material world. Because sometimes people fall into the mode of goodness, but then they quickly get out of it. And even in the higher planetary systems, where people are situated in the mode of goodness, still the same problems are there. But still, in goodness, at least we understand a little more clearly what's actually going on here. Or as Prahlada Maharaj says, that in this world, there's no enemy except for the uncontrolled mind. And the only way the mind is going to be controlled is when we engage it in Krishna's service. So our solution to everyone's problem is not that everyone will solve their problem and then I'll solve mine. Or I'll solve my problem by some kind of material arrangement. The only real solution is we have to hear from the devotees about Krishna and then learn how to dedicate our activities more to him. That he's actually everywhere. Everything here is Krishna's property, and therefore every moment is another opportunity to serve him. And if we do that, then Krishna takes away. Tesham eva nuham bharatam. He takes away our problems, our worries. We're just worrying unnecessarily. Just like the example is given, if suddenly someone came in here, say we had a big problem, for instance, in this building, paying the rent, and everyone had a big meeting, and everyone was just crying that we can't pay the rent, and then suddenly walks in with a machine gun. Everyone would forget about the rent. Wouldn't be a big problem then. So we think we have all these big problems. One time when devotee approached Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, he said, I'm a very small devotee, but I have a big problem. Prabhupada started laughing. He said, how can a small person have a big problem? Small person can only have a small problem. So most of our problems are really insignificant. Our real problem, of course, is that we're going through old age, disease, and then death, and then we have to come back, maybe in Belgrade again. And things are not going to improve, at least not for the foreseeable future. Therefore, one has to hear in the association devotees, and if we chant regular number of rounds every day, if we can worship the deities, if we can hear something about Krishna, do something to expand the Sankirtan movement, then the result is if we can become a little purified, then some of our anarthas will go away. The things that draw our minds away from Krishna, and we'll find it a little easier to concentrate when we're chanting Hare Krishna. It's not going to become perfect all at once. It's not that, you know, one day the good fairy will come with her magic wand and bless us, and then suddenly the spiritual world will open up and we'll go in. Leave everyone behind. It's not the way things work. Yeah, usually, as Prabhupada writes here, it's a gradual process of gradually recognizing. First of all, we have to recognize what we're doing wrong. Usually, we want everyone to tell us that we're doing something right, although that's quite rare that anyone bothers to do that. Usually, we look around, most of our time, we're looking around and seeing what everyone else is doing wrong. It's our usual meditation. Things are not according to the way I'd want to arrange them. Brahma made a mistake. He didn't consult with me before the creation. So most of our time we look around, this is, you know, this person's doing this wrong and that person's doing that wrong and the whole thing's wrong. The only thing is right is how I see things. At least I think see things clearly. It's all bad, and it's getting worse. I'm not trying to be too optimistic. I'm a realist. No, we have to, instead of trying to see what's going wrong with everyone else, we have to see if anyone's doing anything which is right, namely chanting Hare Krishna, doing some service to Krishna, and then we have to figure out what we're doing wrong, and that's not so difficult. All you do is have to pick up some japa beads and chant around. You'll find out, you know, and just get a piece of paper and write down what your mind is going through. And then you'll have a couple of years to work on. Sometimes we pick up japa beads, we start chanting, and we say, oh, it's not working. But it's actually a great opportunity. When we're chanting, we can't pay any attention. Just to note down what we're thinking. Because then you have so much devotional service to work on. get rid of all these crazy things that are going through our mind. And even if we can, you know, write down three, you know, maybe 10 things that go on during our mind, then we can at least choose one of them to work on, usually the one that we're least attached to, of course. We can choose one thing to work on, and if we do that, then when we chant Hare Krishna in the future, then it becomes that much easier to pay attention. We have one less thing, one less illusion to worry about. So in the beginning, we're just trying to get free from the things that draw our minds away from Krishna. But in that way, we become a little bit more attractive, and Krishna reveals himself a little bit more. And then eventually, when there is nothing that's interfering with our thinking about Krishna, or actually absorbed when we chant Hare Krishna, and spontaneously we remember Krishna, and we're actually experiencing what it's like to be in Krishna's pastimes. That even before we develop our spiritual bodies, but there is a stage of Krishna consciousness where when we chant Hare Krishna, we'll just spontaneously remember Krishna's pastimes, and we'll be able to feel with our spiritual senses like we're actually in the pastime. We'll be able to experience what it's like. Although realizing our spiritual identity may come much later from that. But at least we'll chant and it'll actually give us some happiness just chanting. Now we have to chant. And the problem is not the chanting. The problem is all the things that we're doing that's not chanting. Therefore, and Prabhupada writes in the beginning, well, one knows that the goal is Krishna, but he's addicted to the fruits of his activities. Then he said to be acting karma yoga. Because he's expecting whatever he does for Krishna, he's expecting some progress. But that progress is in the material world, usually. Easier life, you know, give me a break, Krishna, I'm working so hard, I have so many problems, you know, give me a break. We think Krishna is here to solve our material problems. Help us out. Help me out, Krishna. Help. Or make me... So one is said to be acting karma yoga. Instead of actually meditating on Krishna, we're meditating on our problems. So meditating on our problems won't actually solve our problems. No one has ever solved their problems by meditating on them. The only thing they do is get more problems to meditate on. And even they meditate on their problems, it doesn't really help their spiritual life. It's not that. Even if Krishna solved all our problems, then we have no reason to turn to Krishna. Because we think, well, everything's all right here. Why should I take shelter of Krishna? He's going to solve all my problems here. I can live in the mature world forever and I won't have any problems because I have Krishna by my side to solve them. I just type in Krishna's name and I just send him a short email and he just... Yes, sir. I'll be right there. Sorry, I'm a little slow. And then, after we start realizing we're never going to solve all our problems, because that's our main problem, is trying to solve material problems. That itself is a problem, thinking that we can solve material problems. Because we should solve some of them, the things that we can easily solve. Like if we're hungry, we can probably prepare some prasad and offer it. That's easily solved. But all the other problems, especially the problems that are completely outside our sphere of influence, you know, who the government is and how, you know, there are so many conspiracies going on in the world, how we're just all victims and that, you know, people are doing so many things wrong and, you know, the sun isn't hot enough today, Indra, you know, sending too much rain. People don't like me. You know, rather than waste our thoughts about these things, we should just try to spend them in thinking about Krishna. Then, it says, if we advance to the stage of actually taking what Krishna says seriously, that the process of Krishna consciousness is to stop contemplating the objects of the senses and therefore going through, perpetually going through the same thing, becoming attached to this object. Usually it's women or men or wealth or followers or something like in that order. Or finally getting liberation, going back, becoming God somewhere. You know, stop contemplating the objects that we think are going to make us happy, and therefore all the illusion will cut off from the root of our problem. And we stop contemplating the objects, stop doing the things that are actually distracting our minds from Krishna, then lust won't develop. And if there's no lust, then we won't become greedy for mundane achievements. Imagining that if I only had this position, or if I was that person or something, then my life would be much more successful. Or if I had a time machine, I can go back to my childhood, that I could get an A on every test. To stop contemplating, then we won't become greedy for mundane achievements, and we won't get frustrated over our present circumstances. God is not kind to me. I chanted so many rounds, but he still hasn't solved my problems. He hasn't given me everything I wanted. Maybe he's not God, or he's not the God that I'm looking for. I need a better God than him. Maybe Shiva should be God. And then, if we're not angry and frustrated, then all our delusion which arises from that, you know, how the world is not made according to my liking, will go away. And then we won't forget who we really are, and then we'll have intelligence to actually realize who we are. It won't get lost in our whole delusion. Therefore, the process is very simple. By cultivating this knowledge of Krishna consciousness, gradually we'll understand the value of thinking about a person who has everything, who is unlimitedly beautiful, unlimitedly wealthy and kind and loving. Then we'll actually understand the value of becoming actually conscious of Krishna. And we'll do what's necessary to that. So that's called Buddha Yoga, to actually look for Krishna. And then at the same time, try to get free from the things that are drawing our mind from Krishna. Then we'll actually be able to see how everyone and everything is related to Krishna. Our main problem is we're looking at people and we're thinking that we have some idea who we think they are, but the actual identity of everyone is that everyone is Krishna's servant. They may be dressed differently in different bodies, but that's the actual identity that they have. They're a spirit soul, and that their real interest, everyone's real interest, is to revive their relationship with Krishna. If we know that, then we have a service. Then we know what to do in relation to others. We don't have to speculate. You know, what can I do to please this person? As soon as we forget Krishna, as soon as we forget everyone has a relation with Krishna, then we have a profit and loss calculation with everyone. If I say this to this person, they'll reciprocate. They'll say something nice about me, or they'll give me something. And if I say something bad about them, then they'll take something away from me. But that's all profit and loss. We'll all just be wasting our time. Actually, everyone has a relation with Krishna. Just like Prabhupada was a self-realized soul. People were very much attracted to Prabhupada because he was so blissful, and he created a blissful atmosphere. But we can see that he never compromised. He just talked about Krishna. He didn't really want to waste his time talking about a million other things. I mean, once in a while in class, he'd tell some illustrative story, like Gopal Bhan or someone. But generally speaking, he just stuck to the topic of how we could realize our relation with Krishna. Because he understood, we're only going to be here for a few moments. Why should we waste our time with a million other things? Why not just focus our attention or try to get other people to focus their attention on their relation with Krishna? And we're going to seek knowledge, trying to understand things, but the goal should be somehow or another to understand Krishna more clearly and how everyone is related to Krishna. then the whole idea is explained here also. Because in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Maya, Mayeva Mana Adatsva, Mayibuddhin Niveshaya, Ivashishashima Eva, Adoravam Nishamsamshaya. Just fix your mind upon me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and engage all your intelligence in me. Thus you'll lose me always without any doubt. So no one can fix their mind on anyone unless there's strong feelings of love and devotion. And of course in Krishna consciousness, then there's strong happiness and pleasure coming from associating with Krishna. So strong that the devotees like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that they were completely in anxiety when they were going to attain Krishna. Day and night, they were just thinking about obtaining Krishna. So that anxiety to obtain Krishna, that's what we're trying to develop. We're not really trying to do anything more than that. Whether or not the world becomes Krishna conscious, it would be nice if they did. But ultimately, each one of us, we have to develop, as Krishna says, develop the desire to obtain it. If we have the desire to attain Krishna, then everything is automatically follows. And if we don't have the desire to attain Krishna, it doesn't matter what we do in this world, we're just wasting our time. In any case, the desire to attain Krishna means that we have to focus our attention on Krishna, which means partly we have to give up focusing our attention on some of the other meaningless things. There may be things that are necessary, like keeping our body together for our health or something, or doing our duties, but just to give up our meaningless activities that really have no basis of anything connected with Krishna. Just unnecessarily worrying about things that are beyond our control or that we shouldn't even be involved in. Then Krishna says, Atachatvam samadhatum nisakshno simayistiram Abhyasena yogena tato mamis chanti dharanja. This practice, the regular principles of bhakti yoga, and in this way try to develop your desire to obtain me. If you can't fix your mind upon me without an interruption, then follow the regular principles of bhakti yoga. So that's what Prabhupada is offering to us. That's what our acharyas are offering to us. A daily practice of sadhana bhakti. And that's up to us to accept it or not. We're not going to suddenly, you know, it's not like there's a door to the spiritual world and Krishna says, would you like to open the door and go back to the spiritual world? And we say, well, all right, I'll try it. Go to the spiritual world for a while. See what it's like. I don't like it, I'm going back. No, what's being offered to us is an opportunity to associate with Krishna daily through the chanting of the holy names, through reading about Krishna, through worshipping his deities, through associating with the devotees, trying to help others become Krishna conscious. Even if we're just living with our family, if somehow or another during the day we forget that this is my husband, or this is my wife, or this is my child, and we think this is Krishna's eternal servant inside this body, there's a soul, what can I do to serve Krishna? Help this person become a little bit more Krishna conscious. Help them revive their relationship with Krishna. Then we're actually preaching. It's not that only if we go out with books and distribute them, then we're preaching, otherwise our constitutional position is to be in Maya. No, we have to seek out opportunities to preach. If we can't preach to anyone else, at least we should preach to our own mind. And there's plenty of preaching there also to do. We could spend the rest of Brahma's life just preaching to our mind. Of course, the mind probably won't listen, so we should probably find someone else. He's more likely to listen. In any case, here Prabhupada writes at the end that one way you have a spiritual, attached with spiritual organization. And he may even have a bona fide spiritual master. But somehow or another, if he's not intelligent enough to make progress, then Krishna will help him from within. The only criteria is that one is willing to render all kinds of service with devotion, with love. And then Krishna will give, help give intelligence. Because we're depending upon Krishna for intelligence. Otherwise, we can't get out of our entanglement. We may know what we're doing wrong, but unless Krishna gives us the intelligence, then we won't give it up. Because we have nothing else to do. But if Krishna shows us a different path, then Krishna will help us out. And if we choose the right path, then Krishna will protect us and make sure we don't fall back into our old habits again. So we may not be very intelligent, and we may have our spiritual organization, our spiritual master, but we have to render service too. We may not know the philosophy that deeply, but if we just accept that Krishna is God, although I haven't realized him or experienced him very much, then I'm his servant. If we just work on that principle and do something to please Krishna, then Krishna will help us to make progress in the path of devotional service. We may not be so expert, we may not be so discriminating, we may not be able to understand exactly what's going on, but if we keep on chanting Hare Krishna, hearing about Krishna, and try to render some service to Krishna in some way, then Krishna will help us from within and encourage us to go forward on the path of reviving our relationship with him. Although we may see everything, you know, has gone wrong, but actually, the fact is that unless Prabhupada had come to the Western world, none of us would be here. And who knows where we would be, what universe we'd be in, and what we'd be doing. So now we have an opportunity to go back to Godhead. It may not be immediate, we may have to suffer the pangs of material existence for some time longer. But at least we know where we're supposed to be going. We may not be going there very quickly, but at least we know where to go. If you're lost in a rainstorm, and the hail and lightning and beating down on you, you may not feel very good. But at least if you know that you have a home somewhere, and that you might eventually get there, at least you have some hope. And if you're lost in a rainstorm, the hail's beating you down, the lightning's striking you, and you have no idea where you're going, you're really going to be even more miserable. So at least we know where we're supposed to be going, even if we're not getting there too quickly. But at least we're being encouraged by the material nature to go there as quickly as we can. So, stop. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
During our previous lives, we are making some good stuff and very bad stuff, which is...
Well, maybe some good, very good stuff, too.
And in the end, everything is calculating.
Yes, Krishna is calculating.
Yes. And by that, we get maybe or some shape of body or shape of mind and like that.
Yeah.
So, when we want to read all these tales, previous tales and from previous lives, usually we can hear the answer that just chant your round holy name and everything will be revealed and you will be free of that.
If you chant your rounds without offense.
Yes, of course. But nobody is telling that there is some affection of some previous karma which has to be done, has to be calculated.
No, nothing has to be done.
No.
No.
So you say that everything could be...
Everything is that if you look in Bhagavad Gita, there's a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. It says, parabdha, parabdha, bija, the different types of sinful reactions. There's avidya, there's bija, there's kuta, there's parabdha and aparabdha karma. They're all taken away by defenselessly chanting the holy name. Even Haridasa Thakura said, that even Namabhas will take away all sinful reactions.
That means that we even if we chant offensively and unconsciously still, is it by maybe some future life it will be revealed to us how to chant without offending? Yeah?
It's even revealed in this lifetime. There's a little, in the Nectar of Devotion is a list of 10 offenses. So we can read that, and that's all revealed to us, how to chant inoffensive. And the most important one is just to pay attention. The reason why we don't pay attention is because we're attached to all these ideas that go through our mind. So as I said, just take a piece of paper when you're chanting and write down what's distracting you. That way you'll at least pay attention to what's distracting you. We don't even pay attention to that.
Yeah.
We're so inattentive, we don't even pay attention to the distractions. So at least we'll pay attention to the distraction, and we'll write it down, you know, what thoughts I have, because don't show it to anyone. And then at least we get some idea of what to work on.
Thank you.
Generally speaking, when you see that, when you see how we're just wasting our time, then we won't be so much because actually these thoughts don't have to bother us. We just allow them to bother us, to distract us. But when we see them for what they are, then they cease to distract us. To see what it is, it's useless. Yes?
Some call it tendency, like you mentioned, that when we chant, we expect that Krishna will solve all our problems.
Like he will solve all your problems. Not maybe the way you hope.
But there is this tendency, like, I mean, the Sutta Prasama used to say we would like to live in Disneyland. Like, for example, now I came to Krishna consciousness, now my life will flourish. In every aspect, but it doesn't happen, you know. Somehow one gets
reaction. Yes, Yadnagrihami Kurishe Tadinashanai. When Krishna, first of all, his first installment of mercy is to take away everything, take away all our hopes for material happiness. Because otherwise, if we have hope for material happiness, how could we possibly fix our minds on Krishna? Would not be possible. Material happiness is just illusion. It's a combination. We're just looking, experiencing five gross and three subtle elements, combining different ways with different subtle senses. Just material energy, which is just Brahman, transformation Brahman. It's just some light show we're going through.
How to learn to find to find happiness in this. In this knowledge that actually it is good for us that Krishna takes away.
How to find?
It's not easy.
We have to become Krishna conscious. Just Krishna taking everything away won't be very good, especially when we're lamenting all the time. Now you took this away. Now you take that away.
Is that good or bad for us?
No, it's not very good if we're lamenting about it. We have to see it. There's an opportunity, one less thing to worry about. Unless we look at it as one less thing to worry about, we'll just curse Krishna for taking it away. I like my worries. You know, I have a whole collection of worries, and now you're taking them all away. I have nothing to do anymore. Take away my engagement, my service. No, we have to use the opportunity to hear about Krishna. Hear about what we're trying to achieve. Hear about the spiritual world, hear about the process of getting there. Try to somehow or another develop some understanding of what's going on in relation to Krishna. So that takes some philosophical vision of things. But we won't get it just by our own endeavor. We have to read Prabhupada's books regularly and try to get and understand the necessity of developing a spiritual vision. Because if we're not this body, we're not the mind, then, you know, what are we worried about? What are we losing? What is my real self losing? Because I'm not the body and the mind, therefore I really have nothing to lose, because I have nothing to begin with. But that way, that takes some study and practice, and then seriousness about applying it. Otherwise, unless we develop that vision, we'll have our own vision. Yes.
Well, I have one question.
Just one more thing. And then in our daily life, in relation, like you have a son and a husband, you may not have that much outside that sphere. But then you have to fix your mind on Krishna in that relationship too. You have to spiritualize your relationships. Otherwise, it'll all just be theoretical. You know, if only I was free and I could go out every day and distribute books and I'd become Krishna conscious. Although I would do that. But no, you have relationships and you have to spiritualize them. Then it's practical. Then it becomes realized knowledge rather than just theory. Yeah.
Well, how do you basically know then when you are chanting Krishna and you are speaking about Krishna, you are speaking about Krishna, if you understand me. You are. How do you know you are serving Krishna?
Because Krishna says you're serving him. So if you think he's an honest person, then you'll know it's service. Just like if there is some important person and you went out every day and went door to door and told everyone about him, elect this person.
Mm-hmm.
Say there was some politician running for office and you went door to door and you were telling everyone to vote for him. So wouldn't that be service to the politician?
Yes.
So you wouldn't have to worry about whether you're serving him or not because it's clear. Of course, just talking about Krishna in itself would not be service. Unless you were actually directing your talking in such a way as to help people become Krishna conscious. Then it's service. But if you just tell people about Krishna without really any thought about how to help them become Krishna conscious, then it wouldn't be really service to Krishna, it's service to your imagination.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, then maybe I can go deeper, if not a problem. I had some experience, I think last night, in which I had multiple instances of existence. So I can be, figuratively speaking, the deer eating grass, and in the same way being grass eaten. And I don't have any feelings about that. And in the same time, I was some kind of predator wanting to eat a deer. And I don't have nothing, no problem with that. Everything was in perfect alignment. And it is the same, in that experience, it is the same view of myself was. I don't have any problem with how I exist. So when I become I, not multiple existences, but become I, I had a glowing mind. I can see everything, I can understand everything, I can see the future, past, and be completely good with it, completely happy with it. And that moment was so big, so stretched through time and space, I cannot explain it. I need 4 or 5 hours to understand it.
Well, if you chant Hare Krishna,
what?
If you chant Hare Krishna and read Prabhupada's books,
okay,
things will become much simpler.
No, just one point. I did. That is what I had in my mind.
Yeah.
I said, okay, this is Krishna, but how I know? What if I am?
Well, what you're describing is not Krishna consciousness. It's an expansion of your imagination, maybe based upon some experience. But when you actually become Krishna conscious, then the experience will be quite a bit different from what you're describing.
Good. What is different experience? That was my question.
That one you can't understand it unless you become conscious of Krishna. Unless you're actually in contact with Krishna, with your spiritual senses, how can you understand what it's like to be Krishna conscious? You can get a little taste by chanting Hare Krishna, because the name of Krishna is spiritual, and therefore we have some experience that we don't get bored when we chant Hare Krishna with some attention.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not really full Krishna consciousness. But we're very tiny, and therefore our experiences will always be somewhat limited. But how can I describe what it's like to be Krishna conscious? I mean, for instance, when you're Krishna conscious, everything that you look at, when one is at least at the stage of Ruchi, everything gives you transcendental pleasure. Every personality, every variety of Krishna's energy is just pleasurable.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you multiply that thousands of times, you become mad after Krishna, your mind can't stop thinking about him, because there's just so much pleasure in everything about him, both inside and outside. Everything is connected with Krishna. And when you multiply that thousands of times, you get to the state of bhava, where your heart is just exploding with love for Krishna and love for everyone. And that's just one ray in the sunlight of prema. And then when you get to prema, there's no more material, there's no material existence, there's only Krishna consciousness. So right now, we're struggling just to chant 16 rounds a day, which is basically, you know, just at the beginning of Krishna consciousness, Vajna Kriya, and then hopefully coming to the platform of Anartha Nivritti, trying to get free from some of our Anarthas. But what actually Krishna consciousness is, we can't imagine. It's not just possible because we don't have spiritual senses. It's like trying to describe a three-year-old child what the fair of Romeo and Juliet is. They have no capacity to understand it. It's beyond their experience.
So I understand. And three or four hours after that, I was thinking only about Krishna. That is the main point. I was my mind was always thinking, what is this, what is that. I was many only about Krishna, not about other God, not about thing I should do, not about needs, only about Krishna.
Yes, but that just thinking about Krishna for 3-4 hours, it's nice, but that's not perfection yet.
I understand, but my question was, it is a good point.
But then again, what you're thinking, you may think about Krishna, but we have to learn what to think about Krishna also. It's good to think about Krishna, but we should also know what we should think about Krishna, namely how we should serve Krishna. Krishna is not just some object of meditation for us. He's an object of service.
Mm-hmm.
So we should think about how to serve Krishna. Then automatically we'll think about Krishna in a way which will be devotional.
Yes, and Krishna said to me how to serve him.
Well, Krishna is telling everyone how to serve him.
And that's
the problem
is
that people don't listen to him.
Do I listen to that?
So how are you going to serve Krishna?
Well, first time about 6 months, no, 1 year before, he told me, told to me to have a child. And I accept that.
Did you consult with any of Krishna's representatives?
No, I didn't know about what is Krishna there.
Krishna says here in this verse,
what?
Krishna says in this verse, Krishna says in the verse we read, Tesham Satatam Yuktanam Bhajantam Priti Purvakam Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam Yena Mam Upiyantite. To those who constantly are devoted to serving me with love, then I give them the intelligence by which they can come to me.
So I didn't hear what they.
To those who are constantly serving me with love, then I give them the intelligence by which they can come to me.
Come to me, okay.
Yeah. So unless you're qualified, Krishna is not going to speak to you. You have to be qualified. You may think Krishna is speaking to you, but that's your imagination. It's not necessarily Krishna.
Mm-hmm. So who is then speaking to me?
Your mind.
Because you know there is a simple coincidence maybe, because when that I had that communication and I accept that, I come here. Then I come here. I didn't know what is Krishna. I don't know what is that. I come here, I listen, and I say, oh, this is maybe Krishna. This is maybe Krishna talking. And
yeah,
now,
unless you're qualified, Krishna is not going to personally talk to you.
Okay, but who isn't speaking?
Who speaks? Your mind, your imagination. So many people think Krishna is speaking to me. I remember one time, one devotee said, Krishna came to me in a dream last night and told me to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And then another devotee said, well, Krishna came to me in a dream last night and told me that actually he was lying to you. And then I should tell you what Krishna really wants you to do.
I didn't hear you.
That one of the devotees said, I went to sleep last night, and Krishna came to me in a dream.
You were lying.
And told me that Krishna was lying to you, and this is what Krishna actually wants you to do. Anyone can say Krishna is talking to me.
Mm-hmm. But how can I know difference? And how can I know
therefore
I'm
we
right
have Guru,
back?
Sadhu, and Shastra, they all have to agree. Krishna within the heart, who's a super soul, he gives us intelligence externally through guru, through sadhu and shastra. And when they're all in line with each other, they all agree, then it's very likely that that's in alignment with Krishna's desire.
Like checking it is okay, everything, then alignment must be
right.
Confirmed.
Now that Krishna is schizophrenic, and he says one thing in one person's heart and another thing in someone else's heart, because he's a little confused with these different people.
Mm-hmm.
Krishna has the same message in everyone's heart. And that message he's delivering externally through the gurus, through the sadhus, and through the shastra. So we want to hear what Krishna has to say. In our conditioned state, we have to listen to guru, sadhu, and shastra. And then Krishna will remind us of guru, sadhu, and shastra. And that's Krishna speaking to us.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Yes.
You said the gopis are an example of love to Krishna.
Proč to samo šuma bagala kurmu? Da ako osoba želi razviti ljubav u odvojenosti prema Krishna, treba da odabere nekog stanovnika Vrindavana i da sredi njegov.
I read the Bhagavata that the person want to develop love for Krishna in separation must choose one of the devotees of Vrindavan.
You don't have to worry about that. Right now we have to choose the devotee who's right before us. So many devotees who are here that you're associating with, and choose their good qualities, how they're engaged in devotional service, and try to follow their examples and instructions. You don't have to worry about some resident of Vrindavan. Most of the residents of Vrindavan who are in Vrindavan right now, you shouldn't follow them.
Would you explain the what the Brahmana said who worshipped the Maharaja Nanda? Something from
Padyavavish. Anyhow, some Brahmana said, I don't worship Krishna, I worship Nanda Maharaj because Krishna's little boy is crawling in his courtyard.
Yes, that Brahmana record ne obožava Krishna directly, nego Maharaja Nanda, jer Krishna puzi kao mali dečak u njegovom dvorištu.
But we don't have to worry about that. Krishna, first of all, most of us don't even have a courtyard. Nor is Krishna crawling in there. Nor are we not. We don't even know Nanda Maharaj. But we do know the devotees we're associating with. And we should develop at least some respect for the devotees and appreciation for them. Then we'll make some spiritual advancement. And then one day we may meet Nanda Maharaj and develop some relationship with him. But if we met Nanda Maharaj, what would we do now? We invite him to go out to the movies with him. That's not our business right now. Worship means service. Our service to Nanda Maharaj and the resident Vrindavan is to develop, is to spread this Krishna consciousness movement. And if we're not that enthusiastic, we don't have the means to do it, at least we should try to see our relation with the other devotees, develop that. Because that's also spreading Krishna consciousness. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Yari Dekha Tari Kaha Krishna Upadesh Amara Agaya Guru Tanahare Desh. Hana Edesh. That whoever you meet, you tell people about Krishna. And that way you become a spiritual master and help deliver this world. So it doesn't mean only to the people outside the Krishna consciousness movement. It also means we should also tell the people within the Krishna consciousness movement about Krishna. Anything else? Yes.
Srila Prabhupada said that we can return to God in one second or in many millions of lifetimes.
Yeah.
The second part I understand, but can you help me to
only a question of understanding and accepting the fact. So that's what Prabhupada writes. Not one can obtain divine life in one moment, but not after millions of years. It's only a question of understanding and accepting the fact that we're Krishna's servants and therefore do what's necessary. And then there's a whole other thing, 71 verses before that, which explains that. So if you don't know what it meant, read the other 71 verses before that. Like this, Puryamahana Machala Pratishtam Samudrama Pabhavishapiyadva. One who is not disturbed by the incessant flow of desires that enter like rivers into the ocean, which is always being filled but is always still, can alone achieve peace, and not the man who strives to satisfy such desires. The person who gives up all desires of sense gratification, who lives free from desires, who is devoid of false ego, gives up all sense of proprietorship, and he alone can attain real peace. If you can do that within a moment, you'll be in the spiritual world. And if you don't do that, then you may read Bhagavad Gita for millions of years, and you still won't understand what's going on. You know, this verse is too heavy. I'll set aside for my 300 lifetimes from now. Try to understand it. The only verse I really like is Patram Pushpam Balam. That I'm trying to understand.
Thank you.
Yes.
Can you explain me? Because many of the people who joined Krishna consciousness earlier, like 30 years, 40 years earlier, when Srila Prabhupada left this world, I mean physically, not by the books. Actually, the question is, can you describe the difference between the Srila Prabhupada's preaching and his disciples' preaching nowadays? Because the people are confused. Is this the way it should be, the right path for the absolute true?
People are always confused. That's why we're in the world.
Definitely. Definitely. But when the Prabhupada was here...
Whatever I say is not going to end everyone's confusion.
Yeah.
So Krishna says, Nimitra Matram Bhavasavasachin, become an instrument. So in proportion that any of us are following the teachings of Prabhupada, in proportion that we've understood, realized Krishna consciousness, to that extent we can repeat it. But in any case, even if we don't understand it and haven't realized it, we just repeat the message, then we're doing what Prabhupada asked us to do. Because that's what he was doing. He may have done it with more realization, but that's basically what he did. He repeated the message. So if you listen to a lecture and they're just repeating the same philosophy, then you're hearing from Krishna. Because none of us are making up the philosophy. It's Krishna's philosophy. And he's the one who's giving everyone's remembrance to remember what to say about that philosophy. You're actually hearing from Krishna.
Why he has so much power, Shakti, through the words, and the souls are so convinced when he's preaching than the nowadays gurus?
Why? For one reason is that Prabhupada was self-realized. So when he was preaching from the platform of being in the spiritual world. It's like reading a book about, you know, Hawaii, and then telling people how nice Hawaii is. But if you're actually in Hawaii, if you visited Hawaii, or if you're in Hawaii, then of course it's more convincing because you're telling them what you've actually experienced. Therefore, what we should do is not preach about how nice the spiritual world is, but we should preach about how to get to the spiritual world. That would be more helpful. First of all, even Prabhupada didn't preach about the spiritual world. He preached about the means of getting to the spiritual world. So although he was so powerful, see how reluctant people are to take up what he was saying too. So it's not like the gurus nowadays are telling people what the process is to get to the spiritual world, and people are not following it because they have no potency. But Prabhupada said the same thing. People didn't follow him either. More people followed him because he was self-realized. But still, you know, ultimately it's difficult for the conditioned soul to accept that there is a God more important than they are. No one likes to hear that. It doesn't matter how many times you say it, or which way you say it. People are just, they won't, that's not what they came there to hear. If you flatter them, tell them how wonderful they are, that they're willing to hear that. If you tell them that you're an illusion, they think this person is like, wasting my time. That's not what I came here to hear. One more question.
Yes, well, if I may continue, because I need time to think what we're speaking. It's not a problem. For 1 year I was I was testing it is Krishna or not Krishna. So I request from Krishna things. And everything I requested he gave to me.
He's your servant.
What?
He's your servant.
No. Well, maybe. And that is what I'm asking myself.
He's giving so many people what they want in this material world. But you're not, and you want, if you want him, that's a different thing. Then you have to follow his process. Otherwise, people are getting so many things, more than you have. That doesn't mean they're becoming Krishna conscious. People may get much more than you. Everyone's asking Krishna for something. Because unless Krishna everyone's desiring and asking Krishna for something. Some people more directly, some people indirectly.
Mm-hmm.
But even they're not directly asking for Krishna for something, still he's giving it to them. So you're not the only one who got something.
No, I don't think I'm the only one.
But our process is not to learn how to ask things from Krishna. It's to ask Krishna how I can serve you.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to serve Krishna, then you have to become. You have to follow the process that's given by our acharyas.
Mm-hmm. I understand now. Thank you.
One more question. I
said that Prabhupada never made a compromise.
You told that Prabhupada never compromised.
Kako se onda može objasniti pojava novih procesa u okviru svjesnosti Krišna kao što je kolučno?
How can we then explain the appearance of new techniques in our movement, like coaching, life coaching, I don't know. Some new techniques, I don't know.
I don't know if the aim is to help people become Krishna conscious and things like that. If you're coaching people how to join the Serbian Olympic team, it may not be very good. Probably the devotees are so stubborn they don't want to listen to the Bhagavad Gita class. So you have to tell them something which appears to be like coaching, then you throw them the Bhagavad Gita there anyhow. when they're not looking, you throw them the Bhagavad Gita. Otherwise they wouldn't come. Thank you very much. Grand Raj, my Bhagavad Gita.